Welcome to Pulse 21, the podcast that, in 21 minutes or less, provides inspiration and insights from influential leaders who are guiding the restoration industry into the future. Stop working harder and start working smarter.
Hey everyone, welcome back to part two of our interview with Dr. Jamar Tisby. Without any further ado, we are going to hop right back in. So Jamar, let's say that we've got some companies who are on board and hear what you're saying, and they believe you and see that what you're saying is true. What do they do now?
Well, I'm going to do my happy dance first if companies see that this is important and want to take next steps. So I was talking previously about the arc of racial justice, which is a great framework to be thinking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. But let's drill down. You know, what does it actually look like? And we'll just take each of those sections in turn. I'll give a few suggestions, you know, toss out questions, objections, problems, if you want. But on the awareness front, I'm going to speak particularly to leadership here. You have to equip yourself to understand these issues, because the ceiling in your organization is going to be your knowledge and your willingness to move forward on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I understand the strain. I've been in leadership before, and it's very hard to have these conversations when you're in a room with your direct reports, when you're in a room with people you supervise. How can you actually open up about your honest beliefs or troubles or questions around these very sensitive topics of race and ethnicity? It's hard to do that. So maybe you get into a cohort of leaders of different companies and organizations. Maybe you find yourself in an environment where you can actually be honest and open and free to learn about these things. But you also just have to take ownership of increasing your awareness. It's not going to happen passively. You've got too many things on your plate. You've got too much to do just with work, let alone family and health and everything else. So there actually has to be a schedule. So what do you do to increase your awareness? Maybe you find a couple of podcasts that you can listen to a couple times a week on your way to or from work. Maybe you map out your reading schedule. And if you don't, you know, if you're not motivated to do it on your own, maybe you get a partner or a book study group, right? Maybe there are a couple of websites or even social media accounts that you follow, and it'll pop up on your timeline and keep you aware of these things. Maybe you put a Google alert for certain keywords around race and racial equity. So there are lots of ways. We live in the information age. There are lots of ways to increase. What I'm advocating is that we're proactive about it and that we take ownership of it.
Yeah. So and for social media users, I'll give this little tip here, because I got completely off Facebook and completely off Instagram, but I kept my Twitter, and I don't ever post anything on Twitter. I just follow. So I follow you and I follow a few other people. I've like curated it to see exactly who I want to see. That's going to give me the good reminders that I need. You know what I mean? And I cut out everybody else. Yeah, it's just very much crafted to, I want to know what these people are saying and what these people are reminding me of every day. Helps me to keep my mind what I think is in a good place and on important things.
That's great. Absolutely. You can take ownership of your timeline. You have the tools, and folks who are sort of skeptical or even just not sure how to use the technology, there are ways to do it so that it's very helpful, and you don't have to get into all the drama that is constantly on the internet.
So, that's one of the good sides of social media.
Right. There are some upsides to it for sure. Relationships. I'm really intrigued by this one because I think it has so much potential. So when we think of relationships, typically we think of one-on-one, friendships, colleagues, things like that. I think of relationships in those terms, but also in terms of partnerships. So who is your company or organization partnering with in terms of other organizations, right? And can those be Black-led? Can those be minority-led? Can those be in predominantly Black or Brown or Asian communities and whatnot? That takes, again, some intentionality because of a lot of history and inequality. These companies tend to be smaller. They tend to be harder to spot on the radar. But if you are intentional about it, you can certainly find, and it can be anything from vendors who provide certain products for your company's operations to more robust partnerships in terms of your product offerings, your manufacturing, whatever it might be. So those are also relationships. Also with relationships, local city leaders and getting to know who is influential in the community, whether in a formal elected role or an appointed role or more of an informal role as a community leader, community organizer. Those relationships can really inform you about issues, problems, priorities in other communities that you would never hear about in your normal day-to-day course of work. But also, of course, individual relationships matter greatly as well. And you probably already have more diversity than you realize in your network of friends and colleagues. But have you been intentional about really getting to know and learn the stories of the people who are different from you? So it's one thing to work next to or to be in a group with somebody who's from a different racial or ethnic background, but have you actually engaged around those differences? Have you had a conversation around them? Now, this is delicate because speaking as a Black person, these conversations can get very tedious because we constantly get asked to talk about race or to explain our experiences. And there is, it's most frustrating when there's really no effort on the part of the person asking to take ownership of their own awareness. In other words, there's stuff you can learn by doing one thing. And one of my favorite responses to questions is just two words long, Google it. Like there's a lot you can learn just by doing a simple internet search or reading a book or watching a show or whatever it might be. So like do the basic bare minimum. But if you do have a good enough sort of rapport and relationship with someone, it can be helpful to say, hey, tell me about your experience as a Black person working in our company. Or where'd you grow up? I grew up so-and-so. Where'd you grow up? Let's share stories. You know, it's not that hard when we think about it. I talk about in the book, how did we make friends when we were like in kindergarten? We didn't have this elaborate plan. We would walk up to somebody and we'd say, hi, I'm so-and-so. Will you be my friend? And then you got a new friend. Yeah. You go off and play together. So maybe we tend to overcomplicate the relationships part and we need to simplify it a little bit.
Yeah. And just being sensitive, right? Like, and not, one of the things that we all need to learn is not be so easily offended. And if someone says, you know what, I don't want to talk about that right now.
That's good. Yep.
You haven't necessarily done any, you may not have done anything wrong, but you need to respect that person's feelings and not get offended. Cause it's so easy for us to be like, to get offended and then get like, you know, and harden up
again. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, I tried to talk to them about it and they didn't want to, so I'm never going to talk to anybody about it again. It's like, I mean, it's kind of like, and you know, sometimes we say that, you know, we say trauma and sometimes it is trauma and sometimes we're just using it as hyperbole. But you don't just walk up to somebody and be like, hey, tell me about your trauma.
That's right.
You can't. And like, we don't do that. And we need to understand that people's experiences can, you know, often are filled with a lot of pain and some confusion and stuff that they haven't worked through yet. So give them some space, you know? I mean, like,
that's really, 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 really good. I respect you a lot, Rex, for doing that well. And, you know, in our friendship, the conversations have always been very easy, very natural, because I knew you were coming from a place of humility and respect. And if I didn't want to talk about something, I knew I could say that. But because I knew I could say that, I was more willing to talk about it. So it's a fun little oxymoron there.
Well, and also, like, I think we have to get to a point where we're like, we are willing to be corrected.
Yeah.
And understanding that we ourselves are coming from a place of ignorance in terms of someone else's experiences. Like I don't know your life, you know, and we, you know, it's kind of like your love languages. Like sometimes you give love the way you receive love.
Yeah.
Or we think that our experience is somebody else's experience, but it's like, you can essentially almost grow up on two different planets, right?
That's right.
Where
that's right.
Your thinking is different, and just being willing to be humbled and grow and learn, you know, because, you know, especially these days, we all want to think we have it all figured out. And it's like, dude, but we don't, and we just want quick and easy answers. And some of these things are deep and take time.
And this is harder and therefore more imperative than ever before in history, because the globe has gotten smaller.
Right.
Through technology, through innovations in travel, we can interact with people literally across the world within seconds, within hours or days, in a way that throughout history would never have been even thinkable. In right. addition to that, in the US context, we live in a nation that has brought nations to our doorstep. So mm-hmm. all that to say, we're in an extremely pluralistic society where you are interacting with people from different backgrounds and cultures more than ever before. I mean, it used to be that a couple centuries ago, you would be born in a village. You would live, work, have your family in that village. You would know everybody in that village, and you would die in that village. And you would right. interact yeah. very sparsely with anyone beyond that little circle. Now you're looking at folks who are born in one place, move during childhood, move again for higher ed, move again for a job, and move probably three or four more times for different jobs. So think right. of all the people you interact with, not to mention who we collaborate with right. via work and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Come on. Like, there are yeah. so many different kinds of people. And we do have to be willing to be corrected. So I'll give you one example. When I was a middle school principal, all the way down in the Delta of Arkansas, we had a teacher who was American-born but of Chinese descent. And I wasn't familiar, and still not that familiar, with Chinese culture. And she was a first-year teacher, and so I would have to, you know, sort of coach and correct her on teaching fairly often, just being a new teacher. Same thing, you know, my principal did when I was brand new. And every time I did that, she would just look down. And it seemed to me like she wasn't listening. And finally, I got frustrated. I was like, would you please look at me when I'm talking to you? And she right. did. But then she came to my office a couple hours later and she was like, listen, I just want to explain to you, I wasn't being disrespectful. In my culture, it's disrespectful to look someone in the eye, an authority figure. It's like mm-hmm. it's like being defiant. And so we look down as a sign of respect. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Thank you for telling me that. And it was something I learned, and it was humbling and it was humiliating at the time. But it's also a mistake I'll never make again. Right. So do we approach our relationships, even me in the position of being the boss or the leader in that situation, willing to listen, willing to change? And to go a step further, do our colleagues and employees even feel like they have the freedom or the liberty to come back and correct us right. and approach us like she did? Because that took a tremendous amount of courage. For her to come to me, you know, as a first year employee and, you know, this experienced person in the boss's chair and say, hey, here's what happened. So I'm grateful that they did that. But I also want to make that bar as low as possible so that people know they have that open door.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems like that is one of the great things companies could, you know, we talk a lot about like what we do kind of sort of on the external surface of, you know, trying to diversify. But what if it's in our cultures to, we're going to be humble.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
What if we could build humility into our culture so that when these things happen, because they are going to happen, yeah. right? You're going to have culture clash. And like you said, it's not necessarily, sometimes it's not really the people are meaning to be mean or meaning to, you know, like whatever. We're dealing with so many culture clashes that even if you want to look at it on a biological level, we're just not, maybe not equipped for, because mm-hmm. most of our history, like you said, you've lived and died in a village, and now we're having to like find a way to balance all of this out. So if all of us can approach it with humility and always, you know, assume, I've started assuming the best about people, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to assume that your intentions are good. I'm going to assume until I absolutely cannot, until it's like, okay, this is pretty clear that you're just being like obstinate at this point,
right.
But I'm
right.
going to give you a lot of room up until then. And I think that that really sets us up to have the kind of workforce where you can have misunderstandings and have conflict and still function and be healthy.
And it has to be demonstrated by the leaders, you know, so it could even be a non-work example. But if you give, if you tell your team about a time when you learned something, about a time when you're corrected, about a time when you were wrong, that goes a long, long way to saying, oh, it's okay not to be perfect here. And I don't have to hide my mistakes. And even if the leader does something that's a mistake or a misstep, I can approach them about it. But what you're saying is also getting into the commitment aspect. Mm-hmm. So how can you have a culture of, right? So when we're talking about culture question, we're actually talking about systems. And one of the easiest things is what gets measured is treasured, or what you treasure, you measure. So if we're not looking at the metrics around diversity, equity, and inclusion, then do we really value it? Those metrics can take a lot of forms, from the very sort of straightforward, quantifiable numbers in terms of diversity. By the way, not all diversity is the same. So you can say, you know, 20% of our company is people of color. Yeah, but you still have to break that down. How many of our Asian descent, Latin American descent, Black, mixed race, whatever it might be, because there can still be really, really big problems if, 20% of your company is different races and ethnicities, but you're still only 2% Black. You know, when you drill down in the data, can reveal a lot more going on than just this aggregate number. But are we even measuring that? And there's also qualitative kinds of data, whether that's focus groups, surveys, exit interviews, whatever it might be. There's lots of different ways to measure the sort of climate for diversity, equity, and inclusion at your organization. And that should be something that's sort of ongoing, you know, quarterly, semi-annually, annually, whatever it might be. It shouldn't just be a special initiative that there's all this energy behind one time. And then 3 years later, we're like, you remember that thing that we did around diversity? Whatever happened to that? So measuring things organization-wide.
And not quitting when it gets challenging, right? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, right? So let me speak on that for a minute. My concern is not companies starting, it's companies continuing diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. So I would even, you know, like great athletes visualize their performance. Mm-hmm. They try to envision different scenarios, how they will respond, how they're going to feel, what moves they're going to make. I think the challenge for leaders is to actually visualize the pushback, because there will be.
Right.
There's going to be the disgruntled employee who went to the training, who feels like they shouldn't be forced to have to go through this. There's going to be the angry email. There's going to be a board member or something that comes out that is going to say, hey, pump the brakes on this diversity stuff. Or you're doing too much, or you're going too far. Visualize what you're going to do in that situation, because that's really where the rubber hits the road. It's not you starting something. I'm confident that anybody listening or watching to this wants to do the best they can by all kinds of people, and will put money behind it, energy, personnel, all of those things. What I'm more concerned about is, will you continue it when the pushback comes? You want to know why we're still having these conversations in the 21st century? It's because a lot of people started, but when the opposition came, they didn't finish. They didn't continue. And to see the real fruit of these initiatives, it's going to take years to change a company culture, years to change a company demographics. That means you're going to be faced with countless decision points where you can say, I'm either going to stay the course or I'm going to shrink back. I'm going to stay the course or I'm going to turn my attention to these other important but less controversial areas. So that's really critical. And this gets to the systems part of it. We shouldn't rely on our willpower. We shouldn't rely on individual personnel. We should have policies and systems and procedures set up to where it's just built in. Like, where do we recruit? Oh, we don't have to think about that. We're all over the place and we're getting all different kinds of people. How do we promote? How do we compensate equitably? Right? Like, these are written down, these are built in, these are decided upon and agreed upon so that it doesn't have to come down to one person's initiative or willpower or presence. Because what if that person leaves? What if that person gets burnt out? What if one day you don't have the willpower to keep going and everything just stops? We can't just have it rest on an individual or even a group of individual shoulders. It has to be built in to our operating system as a company.
Thanks for tuning in to Pulse 21. See you next episode.